Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to Tech Talk. I'm your host, Dave Williams. Tech Talk is RNIB Connect Radio's regular journey into the world of technology from a blindness and partially sighted perspective. We always love to hear from you, so why not drop us an email or a voice note? Let us know what you're up to with your tech, whether it's difficult, whether it's easy, whether you've got a tip, a question, or something else. You can send all of that via email or a voice note to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be featuring the first episode of our occasional Tech Bites series, where we'll be learning more about the JAWS for Windows screen reader. And we'll be talking with Tasneem Arshad, who'll be learning more about the latest low vision technology. That's all coming up this time on Tech Talk. Welcome in, Callum Stoneman, Tasneem Arshad. Good to have you back with us. What's grabbing your attention at the moment, Callum?
There was a documentary on recently that it was on TV a few weeks ago, but I've just caught up with it on iPlayer, called The Secret Genius of Modern Life. And one of the episodes, episode 3, was all about the virtual assistant. And they kind of took apart an Amazon Echo device and were exploring all the components of Lady A and how it all works, how it processes a request, and how they got the speech to sound so natural. If you're into that sort of thing, it's fascinating. Quite a lot of it went even over my head, to be honest, but definitely worth a watch.
Because they've got a bunch of microphones inside them, haven't they, those smart speakers? There's sort of like seven
yeah,
mics.
Six,
is it? Yeah, incredible, yeah.
I mean, when you think about the size of an Echo Dot, for example, and you've got the speaker and a processor and then six microphones in that tiny little device. It's unbelievable.
Tasneem?
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds really interesting, Callum. And interestingly, I heard on the radio this morning, actually, about a bunch of teenagers or kind of adults, I can't remember what it was, some sort of birthday party where they went out on this sort of gaming thing where it's very virtual reality. And that's kind of what people are kind of doing now, instead of kind of going out and doing the more traditional sort of things where you might go and do laser or go out for the day. They were doing this sort of virtual reality where they're wearing these goggles and it's very interactive, very virtual orientated. And that was like a birthday outing for a bunch of people. I thought that was really quite interesting.
So what have you learned recently about technology, something that you never knew? Why not share it with the Tech Talk audience? You can drop us a line, techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Now, if you're anything like me, you will be terrible for doing that classic thing of putting your keys down in a safe place, or a so-called safe place, come to find them a couple of days later, or maybe even a few minutes later, and you've got no idea where that safe place is. So something that I bought to try and help me out with this is the Apple AirTag. And what this is just a tiny little disc-shaped tag, probably, I'd say, maybe just a bit bigger than a 50p coin. And it's just a little tracking device. So you can attach this to your keys. You could put it into a wallet. There are some wallets now that have dedicated compartments for the AirTag. So you could put it in there. Some people have been attaching them to pets. So, you know, attach one to the dog's collar, for example. So if the dog gets out, you can track it. Basically anything. Some people are using them for luggage when they go abroad, you know, to make sure that the luggage is where the airlines say it's going. And the only thing you'd have to bear in mind really with this is that if you say you buy one of these and you want to attach it to your keys, which is what I'm going to do with this one that we're going to set up, then you will need to buy a little holder separate. So the AirTag itself is, as I said, just a tiny flat disc. There's no kind of clip or no kind of attachment with it. It's just flat. If you track in, you know, a wallet or a backpack, that's not too bad because you could just slot it into a compartment somewhere. But if you want to actually attach it to something, then you'd have to buy a little holder for it. So maybe just worth bearing in mind, just look on Amazon or Apple's website or something like that for one of those. But the functionality of the AirTag itself is really simple. So using the Find My app on your iPhone, you can see the location of the AirTag on a map. You can get it to play a sound. Quite similar functionality to the Tile, really. That's been around for a while. So you can get it to play a little sound. If you've got one of the newer devices, you can do precision finding. So say it was on a table in front of you and you were moving your phone along, it would give you some more precise directions. So, you know, 2 meters away, 1 meter away, etc. And you can also enable lost mode, which is quite nice. So if you really can't find the AirTag, or if it's in a location that you don't recognize, you could turn on lost mode. And then when someone finds it with their iPhone and scans the AirTag, they will get a little web page with whatever message you've put up there. So you could put up your contact details and you could say, you know, if you find these keys, please contact me on this number or this email address. And then hopefully whoever finds it will get in touch with you and you can get whatever it is back. So this is really simple to set up. And if you've had NFC devices before, you'll be quite familiar with this kind of setup. So all you have to do is just bring the device near your phone and it will instantly pick it up pretty much. So there's two ways of doing this. You could go to the Find My App and then go to the Items tab, click Add, and then it would search for nearby AirTags. But you could also just tap the AirTag to the phone. So when you first get these, this AirTag was set up initially, but I've removed it now so we can go through the setup process again. So when you get these initially, there'll be a little tab where the battery is. So all you do is just pull that tab out. The AirTag will boot up, which takes a couple of seconds, literally, and we'll do a little tone to let you know that it's ready. And then from that point, all you have to do, my iPhone is unlocked here and I'm just on my home screen, and I'm just going to take the AirTag and just bring it near the device. The positioning doesn't really matter. I'm just going to tap the AirTag towards the top of my phone and hopefully it should detect it.
AirTag, heading.
There we go. It's picked it up. And it says AirTag, and if we have a look at this screen.
Close, button, connect, button.
So we'll click on connect.
Name AirTag, heading, close, button.
So now it's asking us to choose a name.
Backpack, picker item, adjustable, 1 of 11.
And it's got some suggestions in here, so, and it says adjustable, so if we flick up with one finger to cycle through these, first one is backpack.
Bike, 2 of 11, camera, 3 of 11, handbag, 4, headphones, 5, jacket. Keys, luggage, a umbrella, 9 of wallet, 10 of 11, custom name, 11 of 11.
And then you can add a custom name as well. So there's some kind of pre-filled suggestions. And if you don't like any of them, or if you want to call it something different, you could add a custom name. I guess those suggestions just give you a really good idea of the variety of devices that these can track. So I'm going to attach these to my keys. So I'm going to go back down, flick down with one finger until we get to keys.
Wallet, umbrella, luggage. Keys, 7 of 11.
There it is. Click continue.
Continue. Button. AirTag is linked to your Apple ID. Heading.
Now, for some reason, on this screen...
Close.
If you flick to the right with VoiceOver, you get the AirTag is linked to your Apple ID.
Close. Button. Close. Button.
And then there's just a close button. But what's actually appeared on the screen is some kind of terms and conditions, basically. But in order to get to them, flicking left or right doesn't work. So initially, to get to them, you have to explore by touch, and then you can flick left and right from there. So I'm just going to tap randomly on the screen.
AirTag is linked to your Apple ID. Callum.Stoneman at AirTag is intended solely to track items that belong to you. Using agree button. AirTag is intended solely to track items that belong to you. Using AirTag to track people without their consent is a crime in many regions around the world. AirTag is designed to be detected by victims and to...
So it's basically just saying what it can and can't be used for. So we'll agree to this.
Agree. Button. Callum's keys. Heading. Close. Button. In progress. Connecting. Callum's keys. Heading.
And it's already called it Callum's keys, which is fine. That's pretty good. You might have heard the AirTag itself did a little tone there as well to let us know that it's set up. So I think it's set up anyway. Let's see what we've got.
Close. Button. Close. Button. Precision finding. When AirTag plays sound, find your AirTag by playing a sound from your iPhone. Notify when left behind. Receive a notification whenever you leave your AirTag behind.
This is just giving us a little kind of summary of what the AirTag can do. So that's one thing that I didn't mention. If you leave the item behind, it can tell you. So, you know, if it detects that you've been away or you're from the item for more than a certain amount of time or a certain distance away, it can say, you know, you've lost your keys.
View and find my map. Button. Done. Button.
And then click done.
FaceTime.
And I'm now back to the home screen, and that's the AirTag setup. So if we now open the Find My app. Open Find My.
Find My.
There's the tabs at the bottom. I'm just going to go to Items.
Me. Tab. Selected. Items. Tab. 3 of 4.
And now from the easiest way that I find to actually locate things in the Find My app is, once you've found the tabs at the bottom, just flick to the left.
Device. People. Identify found item. Callum's keys. Home. Now. With you.
So then that's my keys, and it says they're with me, which is correct. They're just on the desk next to me. So if I double tap this.
Map. Card controller.
So it's now showing me the location of my keys on a map. Again, I find the easiest way in this app is just to go from the bottom. So I'm going to do a four-finger tap near the bottom of the screen.
Close button.
And then I'm just going to flick to the left to navigate through the options.
Remove item. Rename item. Enable button. Lost mode.
So that's talking about lost mode that I mentioned earlier.
Selected. Notify when left. Notify when found. Notifications. Find nearby button. Play sound off button.
So this is how you can play a sound on the AirTag. So I'm just going to move it over here near the microphone, and then hopefully you can hear the tone that it makes. So I'm going to turn off speech for a second so that doesn't get in the way.
Speech off.
And I'm just going to double tap on play sound, and then you can hear what the AirTag itself sounds like. So that's the noise it makes for you to locate it, and you could just, it does three of those little tones as standard, and then you could just do the double tap on play sound again if you need to hear it again, if you need more time to find it. And all the options that I mentioned before are in there, so we were navigating backwards, which might have got a bit confusing, but you had all the options in there of enable lost mode, notify when left behind, you could change the settings for that, notify when found, so when if, for whatever reason, your iPhone couldn't find the AirTag's location, you could turn on Notify When Found, and then as soon as the AirTag comes back online and gets a signal again, it would notify you and say, you know, your keys have been detected, your keys have been discovered here, for example. And there was other options there, such as, you know, rename and remove. So if you wanted to delete the device and set it up again, then you could do that in there as well. And that's pretty much all there is to it. So the only thing that I would mention as well, which might not bother most people, but it was a surprising limitation for me, was that you cannot add these to a family sharing group. So for example, me and my wife, we've got both our iPhones. We're on separate Apple IDs, but we've got them linked together via family sharing. So for example, if I was to go to, I'm not going to do it, but if I was going to go to the devices section, I could see her iPhone and her iPad as well, and she can see all of my devices, so she could see my phone and my Apple Watch and my AirPods. And that's obviously a setting that we can configure, but, you know, we find that quite handy, you know, being able to track each other's devices. But for some reason, you can't share an AirTag, because one of these in particular would have been useful for both of us to track, but we can't do that, so... that's just one limitation that I thought worth mentioning, that if you wanted to share these with other people, that's not possible unless you give them your own personal Apple ID and password, which I wouldn't recommend. But apart from that, this is just a really nice, simple little tracking device from Apple. And if you've got an iPhone, just give this a go. It's really useful and really accessible. So I've been pretty happy with this. And hopefully this will... this will mean that I can actually enjoy my mornings without having to spend half an hour searching for my keys.
Callum Stoneman there, setting up his AirTag. Callum joins me now, as does Tasneem. So what do you think, guys? These AirTags, are they a bit of a gimmick, or do you think they're genuinely useful?
I think they're really helpful. I don't use them myself personally, but after the back of that demonstration, I'm you know, I certainly think it's a good idea. I know some blind and partially sighted people kind of rave about the fact that they tag their luggage when they're out and about. I've heard people thinking about tagging their cars because they can't find them in a multi-car park. So, you know, there's a lot of wide range uses, I think, for both sighted and blind and visually impaired people. But I'd be quite interested to know your views about the comparison between AirTags and Tiles, which is, of course, the alternative to AirTags.
Yes, I mean, the Tiles, I mean, I never tried them. The Tiles are a similar concept. You know, it's just a little device that you can put on pretty much anything, and then you can track it and you can get your phone to, you know, make it play a sound and, you know, find it that way. But I think the difference with the AirTag is that the way it can be located, because the AirTag itself doesn't actually track you. It doesn't have a GPS. The way it works is that it will send Bluetooth pings, which are picked up by various iPhones, and it goes off the location of the iPhone. So say if you'd stolen something from me, but you walked past somebody with an iPhone, it doesn't matter if they're connected to me in any way or anything like that, but the AirTag, it would receive a ping from my AirTag, and then it would know the location of that phone at that period of time, and it can therefore see the last seen location.
Hasn't it also got a wideband chip in there, though? So if you have one of the newer iPhones, you can actually use that to get quite precise positioning information about the location of your AirTag.
Yes, you can, yeah. And that's something else that the Tile didn't have. So if you've got an iPhone, I think it's anything from the iPhone 11 upwards, apart from the SE, unfortunately. So if you've got an SE, I know that's quite a popular phone for blind people because that's got your home button and your Touch ID and stuff. But yeah, that doesn't have the U1 chip, unfortunately. So you can still use the AirTag. You can still get it to play a sound and you can still hear the location, but you won't get that. The precision findings where you click on find, and if you're in... It's that kind of thing of, say you're in the same room as your keys and you know they're on the table somewhere, but you just can't find them. It will, you know, direct you, you know, slightly left, slightly right, 2 meters away, 1 meter away, that sort of thing.
The problem I had was battery life. And I guess it's hard to tell until you've had it for a while. But I'm on my third battery, I think, in my AirTag. And I've had it for about a year. And I really expected to get more battery life, you know, I expected it to last a little bit longer, and I can't help feeling a tiny bit cynical about, you know, kind of Apple's attitude to battery life, where that's concerned. Have you had any feedback on battery life yet, Callum?
I haven't had these long enough, to be honest. I've only had, I bought two of them when we were going on holiday a while ago, and actually it's an interesting thing that Taz mentioned about tagging luggage, because that is originally what we bought them for, so that if our luggage went missing or something, we could track it down. Luckily, we didn't need it for that, so I've just put them to more use now. But I've only had them for a couple of months, and so far the battery level still shows at 100%. But that's interesting. I mean, it's got those tiny little batteries in, which should last, you know, three years or so in theory. So I'll let you know.
Right. Okay.
Maybe your heavy usage of them, Dave.
Yeah, you keep losing things.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, I think I'll just I'll stick to asking my wife where I left the keys, I think. So are you using any tech to keep track of your stuff, whether it's an AirTag or a Tile or something else? We'd love to learn about it. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Tasneem, Callum, thanks again.
Very warm welcome back, Ellis, from Vision Aid, joining us to talk more about some low vision products. So previously we have talked about the Clover Book, and you enlightened us all on the features of the various different Clover Books. So again today we're going to be talking about some more low vision products. So for people who maybe didn't hear the first interview with you on the Clover Book, it'd be really helpful, Ellis, if you could introduce yourself and give us a brief summary of your background, please.
Yes, certainly. Thanks, Tasneem. So my name is Ellis. So my first name and surname are exactly the same. And I'm the Managing Director of Vision Aid Technologies Limited. We're a family-owned and run business that specialises in providing and supporting and training on specialist low vision solutions, low vision, well, blindness and dyslexia solutions. And we've been going since 1996. started by my late father back then, who sadly passed away 11 years or so ago now. But yeah, still very much a family orientated company, who in a really lucky position to be able to offer a really wide selection of different solutions from all over the world to try and help people as they sort of go through different stages of visual impairment or diagnosed with conditions or whatever might happen with them for them to need some assistance with those.
And you were mentioning before just recently about how you provide some contracts for the NHS as well, weren't you?
Oh, thank you. Yes. So there is only currently one contract for low vision technology solutions, and that only happens in Wales. And currently in England and Scotland, you only get a handheld, Northern Ireland as well, a handheld optical magnifier and perhaps a light will be provided through the NHS if you're diagnosed with a severe sort of visual impairment. But that only helps in the early stages generally. Wales have managed to go one further and actually provide a handheld electronic video magnifier, which I'm sure many of your listeners will be familiar with. So they allow full control of the magnification level, colours, freezing the image, connecting to a television, and various other useful features, all using rechargeable batteries. So they're just much more powerful than an optical magnifying glass for reading with. And Wales is lucky enough to be the only country that has that. So yes, I've provided the last year for the last 5 years on that, and they're looking to open the tender up again for the next in the next sort of 6 to 12 months or so.
Well, I'm really impressed with NHS Wales, just purely for that, because they sound like they are really on top of their game, and it sounds like it'd be really helpful if that potentially can move forward into both England and Scotland, because for people who live in those countries, you know, that would be really welcome news. So potentially some further campaigning opportunities for other sight loss organisations.
Absolutely. And the Welsh Low Vision Service is kind of the leader in that. I know they are looking at doing it in Scotland as well. They've been looking at it for about 5 years or so there. So I think hopefully they're progressing with that. Unfortunately, I haven't heard any sort of rumblings that it might be happening in England, but we'll see. I guess it's just the costs associated with it, and I know budgets are always tight at the moment. It's probably the last thing the NHS want is some funding to go elsewhere. But the thing is, it actually reduces the strain on the NHS when people can properly take their medication, remain more independent, reduces the need for social care. I mean, there's so many benefits from devices like this that it's when they look at it properly, it's almost a no-brainer from the actual out the cost of a device.
Absolutely. I'm very much a firm believer of spending money where it needs to be spent, you know, regardless of what the budgets are. You know, I'm very much obviously you do have to look at budgets, but it's well worth investing in it, especially in the long term. So not just looking at short-term solutions and goals, but very much that long-term investment. What's going to, you know, give you the greatest mileage, and what's going to be the most beneficial for patients and people?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, so let's move forward and look at some of your wonderful wearable gadgets that you have for low vision users. So can you please run us through which options you have available and some of their features?
So the wearable video magnifier sort of category is quite a new, it's probably the newest category of product, really. The very first one that was made was by a Canadian company called eSight, and it was the eSight One device. Cost about $15,000. I think it was probably seven or 8 years or so ago, maybe even slightly longer now. And they've come a long way since then. eSight themselves are on version 3 of the device, and there are now around 10 different wearable video magnifiers that that we provide. That range dramatically in cost. So that's always a big factor on any assistive technology device, and these aren't cheap products, unfortunately. The most cost-effective one is the Oxeye Onyx at £1,499, and it goes all the way up to the latest eSight, the eSight 4, not eSight 3, and that's just under £7,000, which is the most expensive product of any manufacturer in the industry, full stop. So it's a huge investment for people. But what do they do and how do they work? Effectively, they are a very high resolution camera, which is mounted onto a pair of glasses or a device that you wear on your head. And that image that the camera is seeing is then projected onto screens or a large mobile phone screen, which is directly in front of the user's eyes. And in between that screen and the user's eyes are a pair of lenses, which then allow the user's eyes to focus on that screen as if it's in the distance. So the user's eyes aren't straining in any way to actually focus on it. I'm short-sighted, and if I put a wearable on, the image is all blurred because it's as if I'm looking at a screen that's it's an enormous screen that's filling my vision, but the screen is in the distance, as it were, in terms of how my eyes focus on it. So they're very comfortable to wear for long periods. Indeed, people wear them and sit down and use them to watch films or do kind of practical tasks and wear them for hours and hours at a time if they feel comfortable doing so. The main advantage of these, though, is that because they're wearable, they're hands-free. So whereas other magnifying solutions, like the handhelds ones that we mentioned briefly before, you have to physically move the unit across the thing you want to magnify, the page or the shelf in a supermarket or in the cupboard or the photocopying machine or whatever it is that you need to magnify, which then means doing practical tasks becomes much more difficult because you've only got one hand to do it with. And also you don't get the same level of the screen's much smaller, because when on some of the devices they're right in front of your eyes, they fill up to kind of, well, it's the maximum one I think is 101 degrees of your field of view. Now humans have just over 180 degrees field of view, up to around 200. You can actually see past your eyes. I'm holding my hands out by the side of my eyes on here, but so 101 doesn't sound that much when you've got 180, but when you're actually, that is a big, big portion of your vision. And obviously, depending on the eye condition that the user has, how much of their vision is filled by the screen of the wearable device is very important, depending on whether it's a central vision loss condition they have, like macular degeneration or Stargardt's, or a peripheral vision loss condition like retinitis pigmentosa.
What would you say is the minimal level of vision that one has to have to use these devices? Is there a minimum level or not?
Absolutely, yes. And what we have to be very careful with, and unfortunately some of the manufacturers that we work with, their marketing information, just sort of based on the countries that they're in or just the way they've marketed the product, is a little bit kind of almost hyperbolic in terms of what you'd believe you'd be able to achieve with the device if you just read their marketing word for word. Some of them use things like allow blind people to be able to see. And technically in certain countries, blind is the same as a severely sight impaired user. But there's just the definitions are tricky. When somebody says blind, they assume that they've got no vision at all. Unfortunately, the number of people we get contacting us saying, oh, I've seen this device and it allows blind people to see again, when then we find out that they've only got light dark perception, it obviously can't restore your eye's ability to work. It only can enhance the remaining vision that you have left. So you do have to have some remaining usable vision. But it varies dramatically from user to user, and also with the eye condition. So it's actually quite a tricky thing to sort of pin down. We do have actually quite a detailed kind of qualification process for a user that would like to try one of these, because we don't want to get their hopes up unnecessarily. But for many eye conditions, and even with very low what are called visual acuity scores, so that's when you go to your optician and you look at the eye chart, even users that can't see the top, sort of normally it's a giant letter A on there, still have amazing results when they actually try a wearable video magnifier, simply because of how it projects what the camera is seeing on some of the units then into their peripheral vision. And if they've got age-related macular degeneration or another central vision loss condition, they can then find they can use their peripheral vision much, much better than just sort of simply trying to sit close to a television screen or standing really close to a notice board or something like that. And the other key thing is which you can't, I mean, you can do those things, but if you want to have a look at somebody's face, touching your nose on their cheek is not really a, obviously depends if it's family, I'm sure they wouldn't mind, but for friends, it's just a bit odd to be that close to somebody, and people don't do it. So the number of times people put a device on and then they're absolutely amazed with how much they can see of a friend or a loved one's face again, even to the level of sort of seeing whether they've shaved or not, if it's a husband or whether they normally joke about it was sort of 10 years ago since I last saw you properly and things like that. But it's a lovely thing when that happens, and people, it's almost like showing a video magnifier was 25 years ago when people didn't really understand the technology. But obviously being able to see somebody's face is an emotional thing again. So it's just lovely when somebody puts one of these devices on and can see like that again. It's we're very lucky to be able to offer that.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's the kind of maximum level of magnification that these devices can go up to?
Well, they kind of say 24 to 30 times on them. But the difficulty with that is it's the same actually difficulty that you get in a way with a normal video magnifier type solution. For example, 30 times magnification on a letter that you're magnifying that comes through the post would be a few characters visible on a 20-inch or 24-inch screen. So when you get to that size, they're not really usable. It's just more for a headline marketing kind of feature. You'd really be wanting to look at a text-to-speech solution at that for those. It's a little bit different for wearables because you can use those to see in the distance. So if you did want to look at something across the other side of the road or down the street or in a sports stadium, or people use them for sporting things as well, they're actually playing as well. So you can't do contact sports with a wearable. We do get asked occasionally for that, and you can't drive in them either. We always get asked on that in the hope that they may allow people to do that. Unfortunately, they don't for that. But realistically, they work like a good pair of binoculars. Some of the units do. Others are better because they have high resolution cameras than others. But they're still not as good as a pair of binoculars or a monocular for really long distance work. But for sitting down comfortably and watching television, sporting events, theatres, playing musical instruments, doing artwork, cards, bowls, jigsaws, cooking, gardening, all these sorts of things, which most of those just aren't practical with a traditional kind of video magnifier solutions, they're amazing. So
yeah, and a huge variety of tasks that people can actually, you know, see how effective it is for them and how well it can work for them as well. How heavy are these devices? Because you said previously that they were comfortable to wear and people can wear them all day, so I'm just wondering about because of the sort of almost sponge cake layer that you've kind of described with them, you know, in kind of having this mobile screen in front of you and the sort of lenses in between, and you can wear them on your head and things like that. I'm just wondering how weighty are these wearables?
Yeah, they vary quite a lot actually. Some of the newer ones we have are much more like a pair of thick glasses. So they weigh, the lightest one I think weighs 92 grams, which is about 3 ounces or so. So not heavy. The heaviest one is just over, with a sort of a mobile phone type solution, is just over 500 grams, so half a kilo or just over sort of 1.2 pounds or so, which sounds a lot, but that one has comfortable straps that sort of go over the top of your head and then round the back. So none of the weight is actually on your nose bridge on that at all. It's all supported over the whole of your head. So those ones actually can be very comfortable for users, and you can wear, if you're short-sighted like I am, you can wear your normal glasses or spectacles, and the device fits over the top of them. So that's another important consideration as to whether somebody needs glasses to help them see in the distance or not, as to which unit may or may not work for them or be better for them as well. But effectively, most of them are comfortable to wear for pretty long periods for most users.
Okay, that's helpful to know. What about battery life on the wearable devices? Is it similar to handheld magnifiers, or do they drain faster because they're wearables?
Good question again. That varies dramatically. So some of the units last just over an hour, and other ones go on for kind of four and a half hours. One of them, which is the eSight 4 unit, has an interchangeable battery pack on it. So it's the only one that does. So you can actually hot swap the batteries and get almost continuous use from the device, because you can be charging one battery while you're using the other one. So it's like quite a lot of products, they do vary. Most of them are a sort of 2 to 3 hour battery life though, typically.
So who would you say this is aimed at then, in terms of its audience? Who would you say is your greatest kind of users for these wearable products?
That's a good question as well. They're really aimed at anybody with a sight impairment that's severe enough that they're struggling to do a practical task. Obviously, there are age limits from young users, just simply because some of the devices are designed for adult-sized heads. The youngest user we have, I think, is 5 or 6 years old for it, but that can limit the device choices for them, simply because they may not be able to select all the devices because it might not fit them well enough. And then we've got users well into their 90s using these devices as well. So yeah, age doesn't really matter. It comes down to the person a lot as well. Some people, they try them on and go, this is amazing, I can see really well. But I don't want to wear it because I'll feel embarrassed wearing it in front of my friends, or I wouldn't wear it out when I go to the shops because I'd be embarrassed to wear it. So that's a really important consideration for the device as well. It's just somebody's got to be comfortable using the technology and wearing the technology as well. Largely, people, if they try it though and they are impressed by it and it really helps them, they think, I won't mind too much. I'd rather be able to use my eyes again and do the tasks that I've been perhaps struggling with. But it's still important. But then it's the same. So we've got students with them, people in work, and then obviously people, maybe the slightly more elderly generation, where it tends to be macular degeneration for it, which is age related, where they may want it for help around the home more. So yeah, anyone really.
Yeah, so that's really good to know, isn't it? Because you don't just have to be in education or work, but obviously in terms of the costing, you know, getting things through Access to Work or Disabled Student Allowance assessments and things like that, obviously is slightly more easier to do when you're either in education or employment, as we've talked about previously. But in actual fact, does your 12-month, I can't remember the organisation you use, but does these products also apply to that 12-month interest-free credit?
Yes, they do, absolutely. Yeah, every single wearable that we do it is possible to have it through the interest-free credit. It's Divide By is the company name. That so you're right, that can help. It's still obviously a big investment every month for a user, for someone if they go for it, but it can still, at least it helps a little bit to spread the cost. We do also have a range of secondhand ones sometimes as well, which we do provide sort of full warranties for, because we do tend to offer a buyback scheme for quite a few of the units that we do, as long as they're relatively current models. As we mentioned, the secondhand stock that we have for systems, it can be really useful for people to try and then access them if they might not be able to afford a brand new one.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a really useful option to have, isn't it, actually, as well. How simple are these devices to operate? Do they have, you know, buttons on the side, different physical buttons, or is it kind of more touchscreen based? Is it a combination of both?
It varies device to device. All the manufacturers have taken a different kind of spin on it. Some of them have voice activation. All of them have tactile controls to operate the device, but some of those are built into the glasses or the headset. Other ones are on a wireless or a Bluetooth controller that you have, that you sort of hold separately. So that has its own advantages and disadvantages. And yeah, and some of them have kind of touchpad interfaces built onto them as well. There isn't sort of a pointer, but you can smoothly adjust settings like Zoom on them with the touchpad on some of the devices too. So again, it's quite important to find one that matches the user. If you've got somebody who's got severe arthritis, that would potentially rule out some of the units that they might have otherwise chosen, because you've obviously got to be able to use the device comfortably as well. And then obviously consider whether the condition they have, if it's a motor one, whether that's going to stay the same or might deteriorate over time as well. Because what we don't want to do is somebody to get a solution and then 3 months or 6 months later think, oh, I wish I'd gone for the different one, or this is no longer working for me.
And I guess the good thing is that you've got quite it looks like a robust criteria to run through the various different options. So people can obviously contact you. They can run through, you know, give you a little bit of information about their sight loss, and actually, you know, you could then work with them to find what the best solution is for them.
Yes, absolutely. That's a huge part of what we do. And it's wanting to match. It's the whole ethos really is trying to find the best solution wherever it comes from for that user, because there are so many different ones available, and as we said, they range from £1,500 up to £7,000. So, but the £7,000 isn't automatically the best one for every user if they can afford it. So it's just sort of picking apart what the person needs to do, what their eye condition is, what their budget is, and if there's any other sort of conditions that we need to be aware of. So yeah, the more information they can give us, the better. And it's not a quick kind of 30-second phone call. It's we do go into some detail with them, and then if they want, they can then try them out free of charge as well, in their own home with their television in their kitchen or wherever they might need to, or in their workplace or even at school, to see how they actually get on with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And can I just clarify that none of these wearable devices have OCR text-to-speech on them? It's all purely magnification.
That's the absolute main sort of goal of them. There are a handful that do have some text-to-speech on them as well. In reality, it's not fantastic, though. For the odd bit of reading, it might be useful, but because I guess we've seen it with some of the other devices as well. Generally, the devices that put a lot of features in don't tend to do any of them brilliantly, or certainly the additional ones. It's kind of a tick box kind of exercise to say it's got a feature that another device hasn't. So you just have to look carefully at the particular device, and there are far better and less expensive devices that do text to speech. Yeah, as I said, they're more cost effective than trying to go for an all singing, all dancing wearable that happens to do text to speech as well. So yeah, just something to bear in mind.
Yeah, and I really appreciate your honesty with that, because, you know, I think it's really important, isn't it, to kind of, as you've said, look for the best solution for the customer. And that's what, you know, your organisation, it's very effective in working with the customer and in finding the right solution for them. And actually, you know, the main purpose, as you said, is for these products, is actually for low vision people. It's magnification to suit them, to help them do those visual tasks with the remaining vision that they have available to them.
That's right. And if we have a user that sadly their vision's at the point, or it's never been at the point where they can see enough with the vision they have for a wearable, then that's where the other sort of text-to-speech solutions that we have may be a better option for them. So it's a different category really of solution if they're looking for that.
Okay, so it'd be really helpful if you can run through your contact details again, name, number, well, website, email address and phone numbers, and all the contact information that everybody can access if they're wanting to learn more about your products.
Thanks, Tasneem. Yes, so it's company is Vision Aid Technologies Limited, and our website is visionaid.co.uk. You can email us at it's enquiries@visionaid.co.uk. And our free phone number is 0800 002 5555. I did want to say as well, our head office is in Spalding in South Lincolnshire. So if we do actually have people who sometimes fancy a trip out, or they might be fairly close by to us. And we do have the ability for people to come here and try out all the different solutions as well. We have a meeting room where we have everything sort of set up ready for them to try different devices as well if they want to. But that is by appointment. But if they could just give us a ring and we can organise a time for them to pop in and see us that way, as well as us being able to go out and visit them in their own home if they'd like us to.
Brilliant. And that number again, Ellis, is?
It's 0800 002 5555.
Brilliant. That's great. Well, thank you very much for enlightening us all on the wearable devices and for your company. It's been an absolute pleasure, as always.
Oh, thank you, Tasneem, and same to you as well. Really appreciate it.
As I've mentioned on the show before, me and my wife absolutely love this time of the year. We love Christmas, and we always go all out for it. Our house is pretty much a winter wonderland at the minute. We've got decorations everywhere. We've got a big tree up in the living room. We've got lights everywhere. Most of them smart lights, of course, because it's me and I love my tech. And one of the little things that I set up for this, just for fun, is a Christmassy doorbell. So, as you probably know by now, I've got the Ring video doorbell. And that ties into Lady A, so it ties into my Amazon Echo smart speakers. And then when someone presses the bell, they do a little ding-dong and it says someone's at the front door. But Ring have brought out some seasonal tones. So they brought out some little seasonal chimes. So if you wanted something else instead of your boring, you know, ding-dong tone, you could have a Christmassy one. So this works on, if you've got an Echo device that you've enabled announcements on, it will work on there. If you've got the Ring Chime, the Ring Doorbell Chime, which is a separate device, it will also work on there. But I'm going to show you how to do this on the Lady A app, because unfortunately, or at least at the time of this recording, the accessibility of the Ring app isn't great. So if you want to change it on your Ring Chime, if you've got those, you can go into the Ring app. You'll need to enable screen recognition, and you can then go to devices, click on your Chime, click on audio settings, and you can browse the tones there and change them there. But you will need to use screen recognition to do that, and your mileage may vary. So hopefully that'll be fixed sometime soon, but at the time of this recording, that's not great. But changing it on your smart speakers is pretty accessible, and that's done through the Amazon Alexa app. So I'm on the app now, and I'm on the home screen of the app at the minute. I'm just going to go to devices in the bottom right.
Devices, tab, four of devices.
Now I've got a lot of devices on here, so just to make life easier, I'm just going to go to the cameras section.
Plugs, cameras, cameras, spy cam ring.
And it's now brought up my Ring cameras. So I'm just going to have a look for front door.
Frontdoorring.com button.
Double tap on that.
Frontdoorring.com.
And then we want to go to settings.
Settings. Delete button.
And we're in the settings now, and we just want to look for doorbell sound, because this has got the name of the doorbell. It's got, you know, do you want, which devices do you want it to announce from, and motion alerts and ring alerts. But we want to go to doorbell sound.
About heading doorbell sound default button.
And it's currently set to default at the minute.
Doorbell sound traditional radio button not checked.
And if we have a flick through these, we'll eventually find a heading called seasonal.
Bells, clock strike, seasonal, heading.
There it is. And then what you can do, you can browse through these. They're all radio buttons. So you can browse through these, you can hear the name of them. And you can double tap them, and that will play them on your iPhone, so you can hear what they sound like. I'm using an iPhone on this at this point, so you can hear what they sound like on the device rather than on the smart speakers. So even if you're not near your smart speaker at the minute, you can still change this and preview them. So let's have a look at some of these.
Deck the halls. Radio button, not checked. Jingle bells. Radio button, not checked. Sleigh bells. Radio button, not checked.
So if I double tap that.
Sleigh bell. Radio.
That was playing the sleigh bells tune there. So that's one thing that you could have. You could have that when someone presses the bell. There was also jingle bells there.
Jingle bells, radio button, jingle, radio button.
The one that I've been using is the deck the halls one. So we're just going to flick to the left.
Deck the halls, radio button, not checked.
And if I was to double tap that, you would again hear that that tune. So in my case, our house, when someone comes round and they press the bell, on all the smart speakers all over the house, you get this. Yes, I know, it's loud, it's over the top, but, you know, that's just how we are at Christmas. So, once you've found the one that you want, if you're doing this on your Ring Chime, there's a save button at the bottom of the screen, so you'll want to just double tap that, and that will save the setting. In the case of this, though, in the case of the Echo devices, all you have to do is go back out of this screen, and that will save the change. So now, as I said, when someone presses the bell, that's the tone they get. And then afterwards, it makes me laugh, because afterwards it still gives a little, someone is at the front door, which I think you can tell from that tone. So there you go. That's how you can, if you've got the Ring set up, that's how you can get yourself a Christmassy doorbell. And I should just say, if any friends or family members who are around, who you've got staying with you at Christmas, are getting annoyed by this, I accept no responsibility.
This is Jaws Tech Bytes. Tech Bytes. Tech Bytes. Tech Bytes. I want to show you now the features of Jaws 2022, which are new. For example, there is a feature to split audio. That means that Jaws, for example, sounds on the left channel and all other application sounds are on the right channel, so that you have your phone calls on the right side of your headset and Jaws on the left side. How you can do that, you will ask now. It's very easy. You press the Jaws key and the space bar.
Space.
Then you press V for volume.
Volume.
Then you press B for balance.
Balance.
And cursor left to put Jaws to the left channel.
VB left.
If you want to have Jaws on the right channel, you can repeat all the steps but not pressing cursor left. You can press cursor right instead. So you press Jaws key and space bar.
Space.
V for volume.
Volume.
B for balance.
Balance.
And then cursor right.
VB right.
If you want to have the sound balanced, that means that the application sound and Jaws is on both speakers, you press Jaws key spacebar,
space,
V for volume,
volume,
B for balance,
balance,
and then cursor up.
VB balance restored.
If you don't like to use the keyboard, you can also do the following. Hey Sharky. Sound left.
Left.
Now you can hear that Jaws is again on the left side. You can also do that with the right side, or if you want to balance the sound, you say, Hey Sharky! Sound balance.
Balance restored.
That's the audio splitting feature of Jaws 2022, and I must say I really like it. I hope you like it too. And another interesting feature in my view is the selection of sound cards that can be helpful. For example, if you plug in a headset and you find out, oh gosh, Jaws is now talking through the headset, but I want to use the speakers instead, then you press the Jaws key and the space bar, afterwards the letter C, and then you can walk with the cursor keys through the installed sound devices, and then you can hear Jaws playing back on every sound card which is installed in your system. And if you found the speakers that you want to use, then you press only the escape key, and then Jaws is switched to speakers. The last feature I want to highlight in this presentation is the migration of Jaws settings. That means if you install now Jaws 2022, all your previous settings from previous Jaws versions are migrated automatically during the installation. Well, there's a checkbox you can uncheck during the installation process, but many, many users, well, I do the same, click always on next and they don't go through the dialogues, and then they find out, oh, there can be something to uncheck, but then it's too late and your settings are migrated automatically, silently. There is no request whether you want to do it or not. But you've got the possibility to set Jaws back to default factory settings. If you want to do that, then you go to options in the Jaws menu, and then there is an item that is called Restore Factory Settings. And if you click on that and you confirm it by pressing the yes button, all the settings are deleted and you can do your personal setup in a new client which is fresh installed. Last but not least, I haven't told you about all the features in Jaws 2022, but if you want to peruse them, you can go through the document What's New in the Jaws Help section. And I'm leaving you now with the information that they have also done much work about multilingual use with Braille and speech, and they've also done things around the performance in Office 365. Welcome to the tips and tricks in this podcast, and I've got two things for you to try out. If you are in Jaws and you, for example, have got a Teams meeting, and you will find out that many, many people are writing to you in a chat, then Jaws is reading every message, and that can be very disturbing. And you can press simply Jaws key spacebar and then the letter S to switch Jaws to speech on demand. That means not everything is read out by Jaws automatically, and that can be very, very helpful in Teams meetings. And you can switch Jaws back to full speech when you're pressing Jaws key spacebar and afterwards S again. And the second tip I have for you is for Microsoft Teams. Well, it's not a Jaws feature, but it is usable for all people who have got difficulties now with the search function in Teams, because it's not working reliable in Jaws at the moment because of the Teams updates. But you can use the command bar, and for those who've done the Teams training, the command bar is not a new feature. But if you want to use it, you can press the control key and the slash, so to open the command bar. And then you type, for example, in call if you want to call someone, or chat if you want to have a chat with someone. And after you've typed in the command, you can press the space bar and then you can write the name of the person you want to call or you want to chat with. And the name Torsten, if you want to chat with me, for example, it's written Thorsten. So if you put the first letters of the name in, who you want to have a chat or a call with, you can go with a cursor key through the names. And if you found the right person, then you press the enter key and your chat window opens automatically or your call starts automatically.
Thank you to Carl Ibsen, who has been in touch and asks about the Amazon Fire tablet. Carl wants to know, the Amazon Fire tablet, is it touchscreen? Can you talk to it? And does it have Alexa built in? Callum Stoneman, can you answer that for us?
Yes. So it is touchscreen, but it's got the voice view screen reader on there. And yes, it does have Alexa built in. So it's kind of... it's a little bit like an Echo Show, really, in terms of the things that Lady Air can do. So, you know, it can open applications. It can, I think it can change settings. So you can say, you know, turn off Bluetooth or something like that. And obviously it ties in with any smart home stuff if you want it to as well. So if you've got, you know, smart lights and smart plugs, then you could use the tablet essentially as an Echo device. So yeah, it's touchscreen. It's got an app store and, you know, it's got a screen reader and options for magnification and things like that. But then certain features can be used with Lady A, and it's built in. And it's kind of, it's like an Echo in the sense of that it's just always listening out for that wake word.
Okay, so you can use it completely hands-free if you just want to use those voice features.
Yes, yeah, you can.
Excellent. Okay, Carl, hopefully that's useful. Let us know if you get one and how you get on with it. Thanks so much, Gordon Anthony, who has been in touch with us and is interested in this whole area of colour detection. And he said that, like many of us, he struggled to find a solution to accurately identify colours. He says the best of the bunch, as far as he's concerned, is Envision. But do check the settings to make sure that Envision is only looking out for 30 colours rather than all the colours, because it keeps changing his mind, says Gordon. Have you found that, guys, when you're using a colour detector, sometimes it says, it's blue. No, it's grey. It's blue. It's grey. It's something else.
Yes, I had it last night, actually. I was sorting some washing out, and we had a tea towel that we'd had on the side for a couple of days. And I thought, right, does this need to go in with the whites or with the normal washing? So I unfolded it, laid it flat, held CNAI's colour detector over it, and it was, you know, white, grey, green, blue. I've not moved. It's pointing at the same thing. I wonder if this is one of those times where, because Gordon says in his email, sometimes it's a case of less is more. And I kind of agree. I wonder if it's the problem with the colour detector ones is that the cameras in our phones nowadays, even on the lower end phones, you know, the SE, I wonder if they're just a bit too good, too detailed for it.
Mm. I agree. And I wonder whether it's if what you're looking at is patterned, or it's got several colours in it and it's just been very indecisive, or it's picking up all the colours but it can't tell you what the main colour is. And I think that's what needs to change. You know, there needs to be a tweak made that with the colour detection apps to kind of say main colour background green, so you know what the whole surface area is, as opposed to, you know, it's got red flowers in or brown this or green that.
Maybe this is an argument for using a remote assistant service like Beam My Eyes, where you're actually talking to a human being, so you're able to ask questions. And, you know, if the image is more complex, then perhaps they can do a little bit of describing for you. So thanks for getting in touch, though, Gordon. Great tips. And do let us know, how are you detecting your colours? And finally, this week, we've had a message from Abdul, who wants to know, is there an app or setting that can make websites go into dark mode as standard? So we should probably explain for everyone what dark mode is. This is where, by default, your device will show light text on a dark background. I think one of the ideas with this is to save battery life, to try and reduce how much power your screen is drawing on some of the more modern screens. And for certain eye conditions, I think having reduced glare in the background can also be advantageous. So on an Apple device, by default now, I think we're in dark mode. But obviously, depending on how the website is designed, that can override that. You've also got this reader mode, Callum Stoneman, in the Safari web browser. On some websites, you can press a button and get the reader up, and that'll let you, you know, choose the color scheme and so on.
Yeah, if you go to in Safari, if you go to the format options button at the bottom, usually next to the address bar, then a bunch of options come up, and you've got things like you know, page scale and color scheme, and you can adjust some settings there, and it purely depends, unfortunately, on how the website is configured and how well it responds to that. But yeah, the reader mode could be useful as well, because, you know, it takes out quite a lot of the rubbish as well. And again, how well it works depends on how well the website is formatted and tagged and, you know, responds to it. But what it should do in theory is just give you the main content of the page. So if you just want to read an article and you're not bothered about the navigation at the top and the footer and the fancy animations they've got going on, and sometimes it even gets rid of some ads if you put it in reader mode. That's worth a go.
Amazing. So the thing that, Abdul, you don't tell us what kind of device you're using, so you might well be on a Windows laptop, in which case your mileage may vary and the instructions that you need might be something else. So do let us know what device you're on, and we'll do what we can to help. Or if you need a quicker response, then why not contact our esteemed colleagues in the Technology for Life team. You can email tfl@rnib.org.uk with any tech queries. But thanks for getting in touch with Tech Talk. And if you would like your question or email or message or even your voice featured on the programme, imagine that, you could record a voice note or send an email to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And that's it. That brings us to the end of another Tech Talk. Thanks so much for your company. Do join us next week when we'll be taking a very special look back at some of our favourite moments from 2022 in our highlights show. And then we'll be back bright and early in the new year on the 3rd of January, when we'll be putting together our technology panel of access technology specialists who'll be sharing their thoughts about 2022 and also what lies ahead in 2023. But that's it, I think, from us for 2022. Callum Stoneman, Tasneem Marshad, really appreciate all your contributions throughout the year. Thanks also to our production team, Hal Davies, and everyone else connected with the show. And of course, thank you to you for listening, because of course, without you, there would be no point. So we look forward to your company again in 2023. But for myself, Dave Williams, and the rest of the team here, have a very safe and enjoyable holiday season and a prosperous new year. Bye for now.